I don't know.
We should ask her because she's the only one that listens to all of them.
Welcome back to Box Office Bylines, a podcast about movies, about journalism, shining a spotlight on all the president's men and broadcasting the news up close and personal. From Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, Canada, I am Jacob Boone, journalist. Yeah, that's what I am.
Journalist, period.
Joined, as always, from Halifax, Nova Scotia, by...
Tara Thorne, recovering journalist. Joe Rogan of Halifax?
The Joe Rogan of Halifax.
Too many podcasts.
The Howard Stern of Halifax?
Neither's great. Howard Stern's super rich, though. They're, both of those guys are really rich.
Yeah.
I'll take the money.
Okay. Would you be... Are there lady shock jocks?
Yeah, isn't Call Her Daddy? Didn't she just...
Oh, right. Yeah.
Get
they
purchased.
Make a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta get into that.
Calling people daddy. That's a different show.
What was the movie with Armie Hammer?
Call Me Maybe? Call Me By Your Name.
Call Me By Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I was trying to think of a segue from any of that to outer space.
There's not.
And none of it worked.
No.
Or to Elliot Gould or James Brolin. Or O.J. Simpson.
O.J., yeah.
But none of it couldn't. If you think of any, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Tara.
Jacob.
Today this week we watched one of the lesser known, lesser regarded journalism conspiracy thrillers of the 70s. Sort of in All the President's Martians. Capricorn 1.
Been sitting on that one. Capricorn 1.
From 1978, yeah. 70s heartthrob Elliot Gould, as an intrepid reporter, discovers the government has faked a manned mission to Mars against the wishes of its astronauts, James Brolin, Sam Waterston from Law & Order.
Chung Chung.
And the aforementioned O.J. Simpson.
And a murderer.
Special appearances by Karen Black and Telly Savalas, and Hal Holbrook is in this from mm-hmm. All the President's Men.
And Brenda
Vaccaro.
Written
and directed by Peter Hyams, who I had not heard of before this.
Me either, but he seemed to have a limitless budget.
I think it's incredible when I went through we can talk about the movie in a minute, but when we went through his filmography... It is an impressive amount of movies I have never heard of. So I'm going to give you some names and you tell me if you've ever heard of these.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling Man.
No.
Good Night, My Love.
No.
Busting. That was his big breakout.
Was it a breakdancing movie?
No, you're thinking of Breaking.
No.
Our Time.
Still no.
Peeper, starring Michael Caine and Natalie Wood.
Oh, no.
Hanover Street, starring Harrison Ford.
Nope.
Outland, a sci-fi action-adventure starring Sean Connery.
Outlander, I know.
No, Outland. Different. He was in both. No, wait. No, I'm thinking of Highlander. Outlander was something different. Star Chamber.
Still no.
Running Scared.
Yeah, Running Scared was a comedy, correct? Was
yes.
Eddie Murphy in it?
Billy Crystal and I forget. But no, I don't think Eddie Murphy was in that one.
Okay.
The Presidio.
That's
Narrow
name?
Margin. Yep.
No.
Those are both
the
ones.
Presidio? I thought you were going to like, there's another word I was missing.
Stay Tuned.
No.
And the only films he did that I was aware of, Time Cop and End of Days, the Arnold Schwarzenegger fights the devil.
And Time Cop is Van Damme. It is,
Time
does he
Cop
not have a twin
Van Damme.
In that one? No, that's double something.
That's Double Trouble, I think.
Double Indemnity. Double.
He also worked on, I believe he directed at least one of the Universal Soldiers with Van Damme.
Sure.
So, anyway.
Well, good for him. Sounds like a real workhorse. Of a certain level of films.
Yeah. And he also made this journalism movie.
I mean...
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of a journalism movie.
Half sci-fi conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
because a good chunk of the first half is just the astronauts dealing with lying to the public, because it's sort of it reminded me of Columbo, actually, a little bit, in that most of the time in journalism movies, it's a whodunit, right? We're trying to find out who's behind the conspiracy. And here we know right away. The Hal Holbrook explains in a very long speech to the astronauts why they have to fake this, because they weren't gonna, there was a defect, some company shorted them on the budget, the thing wasn't gonna be able to make it to Mars, and then the president was gonna cancel the program because it was too expensive, and that was going to ruin not only their dreams, but also the American dream, because there was nothing good to believe in anymore. Mm-hmm. The American public was too cynical. There was nothing good on TV. John Krasinski wasn't here yet to give us any good news. So they had to fake it on a soundstage. That was the only way this was going to work. So we know that right from the start, and we get a lot of internal conflict among the astronauts about whether they should do this and whether it's right. And then we get Elliot Gould peppered in as he uncovers little bits of something wrong. And then it kind of turns into like a survival movie in the third act, because they escape to the desert. And we get a lot of scenes of them wandering through the heat and trying to, like, Michael Scott style, trying to make it in the wilderness. Yeah.
Hitting a snake with a rock. A big old rattlesnake. It just needed one hit with a rock.
Yeah. Climbing mountains and all that stuff. And then ends, of course, as any journalism movie should, with a big dogfight over the desert between helicopters and a crop duster.
And a slow-mo triumphant run through a graveyard to one's own funeral.
They arrive back at the funeral just in time. They don't go to a TV station or anything. A lot is made about how, you know, the astronauts, when they escape, they're like, we just need to be seen by anyone. Because they fake the mission, but then NASA fakes ship blew up on the way back. And they realize, oh, they're going to kill us. That's why they escape. And so they're like, okay, the nation's mourning us. All we need, but we're the most famous people, so we just need to show up anywhere there's people. Unfortunately, the plane they commandeered crashed. It's out of fuel, so they have to crash land in the desert.
Populated by nobody.
Yes. So they just need to get anywhere, and Elliot Gould and the astronaut go to the funeral where all the military and the president and all the people who are in on the conspiracy are, his family's there too, but it doesn't seem like the best place to go first.
No, and then the movie ends, so you don't even know how it went.
How it shakes out, yeah. I thought it was going to be like we'd get an interview or something, but no. What did you think? Had you seen this before?
No, I'd never heard of it, and I feel like this is a good time to mention how much I hate space. Space exploration is such a fucking waste of money. I don't care when movies are in space, except for, like, you know, Gravity. It hurts my heart. Like, Jessica Chastain and Anne Hathaway have also been to space in Interstellar.
Sure. In movies.
And, you know, like, I'll go see it, but I'm mad about it the whole time. Like, I think Chris Hadfield is a jagweed. Like, The Martian was good.
Jessica Chastain wasn't in Interstellar, was she?
Yeah, she was. She was Murph, the daughter.
I thought that was Amy Adams.
No, you're mixing up your redheads.
Jessica Chastain was in two different movies where she went to space.
That's right. She has great range. Anyway, so I am...
In orbital range, at least.
I don't care about space. So when I realized what this was about, as you pointed out, they don't go to space.
To be fair, they don't go to space. Yeah,
they don't go. But like NASA and astronauts and all that shit, like Apollo 13, so boring. I just don't care. So it was hard for me to care. Now, when Elliot Gould shows up, he's very funny, big fan. The Geller's dad on Friends, you may know him as. That side I liked. And he has a couple good scenes with his editor. And there's a very good scene where they rigged his car to not only the brakes don't work, but also it keeps getting faster. And he happens to drive off a bridge and not hit the bridge, but just gracefully
the bridge
go
is being
into
raised.
The water.
Yeah. that's an incredible scene of a runaway car.
mm-hmm.
where, you know, clearly shot by a second unit, and we just kind of cut back to Gould behind.
You only see his POV, which I thought was a really smart way to shoot it, because then they don't have to rig a bunch of stunts.
Yeah, but it also leads to hilarious sort of acting where he's like, no, and holds his hands up and
honk,
desperately
honk.
Trying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just honking at everyone, like all the everyone's trying to wave him down, like get
uh-huh.
out, no,
he's like, get out of the way, get out.
Are they in L.A.? Like just the odds
of
that. Houston, right? Like just the odds of him getting through a major city hitting nothing is just like not possible.
I thought it was. I didn't assume they rigged the car to speed up. I just thought that was bad filmmaking. That they cut the brakes, so if you can't brake, then car goes fast. Right, like
I guess.
That was
I
the reason.
I don't know about
he's
space
going
or
up
cars.
Hills,
yeah,
and like
across various terrains.
Yeah, because this is not a good movie.
Oh
say.
No, it's funny. But, all the comments on the free YouTube
uh-huh.
of it say this is a really underrated picture from the 70s. It's like, is it underrated? Mm,
I think it's perfectly rated. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did love everything with Elliot Gould. He's not in it enough, because I would say Brolin's the lead. He's our square-jawed American hero.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting the movie stars two Barbara Streisand husbands.
It is interesting. And I think, would Gould have been her husband at the time?
I think he would have been.
Interesting. Maybe that's how they met.
Brolin still is?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. She saw him in that astronaut costume and was like, 20 years from now.
Have it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, they could have, every scene he is in, even though it tips over sometimes into satire, it's just fascinating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the charisma. So he's like, we're introduced to him at a press conference at one of the astronauts' wives' house. This is where they're, you know, just going to talk to someone. And he's clearly like hungover, and he's trying to flirt with Karen Black as like a fellow reporter, and they have a very easy banter and chemistry in the way that, you know, not his Girl Friday type thing, but
yeah.
there's a relaxedness that's
yeah.
very nice compared to all the high-handed acting we just saw in the past several scenes. The runaway car, he goes to like a frontier town because James Brolin leaves a very complicated message hidden in a broadcast back to Earth that he's like, oh, I can't wait to take my son to the Grand Canyon or something. And his wife gives a weird reaction to that. And so Brolin's like, or Gould says, that's interesting. Goes and interviews her and finds out they took the son to like a made up Western town, not to the Grand Canyon,
mm-hmm.
in which Brolin had taken some home movies, which I thought was going to be the clue, but it turns out they were making a movie at the Western town while they were there. And she's like, and he was fascinated by how you could make something so real looking, even though it was fake. And I don't know if I was, maybe I'm a bad journalist, but I don't think I would have initially put it. I don't know why they wouldn't have said, you know, I hope to take him back to that Western town.
Mm-hmm.
That seems a little more concise than...
It was
anyway.
Very complicated. And he got shot at there.
And he gets shot at twice by some assassin who then immediately drives away. Even though they're the only two people in this dusty old town, you could have
yeah.
just walked up to him and finished him off.
Yeah.
Cops break into his house and plant cocaine. We get like a very long scene of Elliot Gould like going to bed, getting ready, brushing his teeth. So we see the medicine cabinet is empty
mm-hmm.
and his wonderful 70s apartment. And then the cops come in, we're like, oh, we have a search warrant. And they're like, look what we found, a vial of cocaine in the medicine cabinet. So we, the audience, know, no, that's not his. And Gould very much underplays it. Like, how could the police do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you said, there's an incredible couple scenes with his editor where that's very much like old timey newspaper. They even like meta reference an old journalism movie called Northside 777. 1948, starring Jimmy Stewart, where the editor, Gould's like, you're supposed to say, I've got 48 hours to find something big, and then I have to drop it. And the editor's like, I saw that movie. He says it's 24 hours.
And I also love that he's like, they tried to kill me. Like,
yeah,
I drove my car off a bridge, and I got shot at. And the editor's like, sure. Someone made you drive your car off a bridge. And you can't tell me who?
What's fascinating is the editor describes him as actually a pretty bad journalist. Mm-hmm. He's like, all of my other reporters are covering small stuff, you know, like wars and trials. They go out and do the news and get it. And you're always coming in with these outlandish, like, oh, I found out where Patty Hearst is, or I know who killed JFK. And then it turns out to just be, you know, he got spun by some idiot.
Yeah.
Because he's always chasing a big, giant story that doesn't exist. And this time, actually, he stumbles across one.
That sounds valid, but I also don't think they would have kept him around that long if that's all he did.
They bailed him out of jail for cocaine.
Like, JFK was in the 60s. It's like, yeah. We're in 1978.
Was it Yeah. Anyway.
So it's like, I don't know. Yeah, he does seem to be a bad journalist.
And then he finds the military base where they did the fake Mars landing very easily. And there's no security there because they've stopped filming. So I guess production's wrapped. So they leave all the evidence behind. And then he somehow deduces that the astronauts escaped and are wandering in the desert. So he finds a crop duster to go look for them, to take him over. It's crop duster played by Telly Savalas.
Amazing part. So
incredible.
Funny.
Incredible.
Calling his... He likes to call people perverts. I don't know why they aren't doing anything perverted. It's super funny.
It's like A&A crop dusting, and he's like, you must be A. And he's like, which one? The first one? Nope. The second one? No. And then has this story about, how he, like, wanted his sons to take over, but they're both perverts. There's a little bit of that. I wish there was more of it. Just Gould and Telly Savalas or
fun.
Karen Black. Yeah, those were hilarious scenes. And everyone else is playing it so fucking straight.
Yeah.
So, like, Apollo 13. This is man's ultimate mission, and what we're doing is important, and those people are having fun, Gould and his buddies. So, yeah.
Yes. And by the way, this crop dusting scene leads into being chased by two, like, government helicopters.
Yes.
And James Brolin is literally on the wing of the plane the whole time. At one point, they show him, like, with his hands wrapped around some sort of wire, and there's blood all over his hands. I'm like, well, that feels accurate. But then when he runs into the funeral, he's fine. But just the moves they were doing, and it, like, there's clearly a stuntman, or maybe it was a dummy that they glued to the plane. I don't know. But, like, the legs aren't moving. He's not being flopped around. And they're doing full-on, like, loop-de-loops and dive bombs.
So not to get it too into the trivia, but one of the stunt pilots who flew the red plane claimed it was the most dangerous film he'd ever flown for.
It looked it.
It did
also,
look it.
Also, where was the camera?
So at one point, the helicopters, these two military Vietnam-era helicopters, decide to try and force the plane down, like a biplane. So
like
it's got
bump
like
it.
A,
yeah.
Yeah, they try and land on it while they're both flying in the air. And it took me a moment to realize that's all happening. There's
right.
no CGI.
Yeah.
We can see the ground far below. Like, it's, incredibly dangerous. And then the helicopters crash into a mountainside.
And it's like, and it's so porny the way they film the explosions. It's like, you don't need to see as much as you see. It's like, oh, they blew up. Of course they did.
Yeah.
But then it's like, boom, and then it's like slowly falls down the mountain. So we make sure that we know. It's like, yes, you spend a lot of money on these stupid fucking stunts, so we have to watch the whole thing.
Apparently that dogfight sequence was later used in episodes of the TV series The Fall Guy and The A-Team.
It made me think of Airwolf. Do you remember that show?
Yeah, I don't remember it, but yeah.
It was one in the 80s. This is a very 70s movie. Like, casting,
100%.
Looks, the kind of, like, government conspiracy mixed with
because this is right after
Scrabble action. Yeah, like,
and
it's
they reference
very
it. They yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't. I wish it was a little more exciting. I really don't understand. I know. There's a certain amount of poetic license, I guess, or suspension of disbelief. But they're going to fake this Mars landing, which they decide to do. They say they're going to use recordings of the practice runs to broadcast back to Mission Control, so Mission Control thinks they're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's going to be no communication then, because the pilots aren't going to be able to respond, but whatever. But they're going to do live broadcasts to Earth of the pilots on their way, and also when they step foot on Mars. And I don't understand why those had to be done live. Why you couldn't just pre-record those once you got the astronauts to go along with it?
I guess because they couldn't let the networks know. Yeah, I guess they're still beaming it from NASA.
It didn't make a lot of sense.
I did love the guy that kept being like, the TV and the ship, they're not matching up. Like, I'm getting different readings, and they're like, oh, what console are you on? 36? Oh, that one's broken.
Yeah.
Every time, they're like, no, we fixed it. It's fine.
And then he meets his buddy, Elliot Gould, for pool. And he's like, oh, there's a weird thing happening at work. And Gould's like, oh, yeah, what about? And he's like, oh, I'll tell you about it. Let me get another beer. And then he just vanishes. The government erases his entire existence. They put someone else in his apartment and get, like, magazine subscriptions. Which is an incredible amount of work. They could have just said, like, oh, he quit.
I know, and that's also one of the things that when his editor's, like, making fun of him for making up all this shit, he's like, my friend, there's a lady living there. They've got receipts going back for her living there for a year. It's not true. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, it does sound very outlandish in the editor's defense.
It 100% is. And again, for something, like, when they land on Mars... To imitate Mars gravity, which I guess is like the moon's, so they have to be like floating, they just like slow down the footage. Which is crazy. Yeah, I don't know. It's not a good movie, but I really enjoyed all the Elliot Gould stuff.
Yeah, I did too. I kind of would blank out during the astronaut stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the journalism stuff was good. So it's almost like, I guess there were so many like names of the time that they needed to give screen time to, but if they had just made it a journalism movie and like we didn't need to follow the hero's journey of these goddamn astronauts.
Yeah.
And again, it's really hard to watch O.J. Simpson in 2021 do anything.
This was, I think, his like first... big role of any note.
There you go.
Anyway, well, why don't we take a break and come back and talk a little trivia?
Sounds good.
We have a bunch.
Oh, exciting.
Listen to me and listen good. I don't like you, Caulfield. You're ambitious. You think the way to get ahead is to come up with the scoop of the century. Woodward and Bernstein were good reporters. That's how they did it. Not by telling me they've located Patty Hearst three times like you did, or that brilliant piece of investigative journalism you pulled off by finding an eyewitness to the second gunman in the Kennedy assassination. The small fact that the man had been in a mental institution at the time never deterred you, not Scoop Caulfield. Well, most reporters are like me. They are plotters. They spend a lot of their time checking little things, like facts. They cover mundane stories like wars, and trials and hearings. You never seem to have enough time in your busy schedule to stoop so low as to cover a story. You occupy your time with tips from people who never existed, driving your car into water and then claiming it wasn't your fault, getting shot at by unseen gunmen. Now, I really hate to interrupt your meteoric career with something so plebeian as a legitimate story. However, a trainload of propane gas had the bad taste to derail near Galveston, and there's a whole town that just might blow up. So it would be just really peachy of you if you would join your film crew that's waiting for you on the plane at this very moment while we speak.
That was some speech.
I thought so.
Welcome back to Box Office Bylines, where we're discussing the perfectly rated, that is, not under, not over, just right, film Capricorn One. Jacob, what's your sign? Astrological sign.
Oh, I thought you didn't like outer space stuff.
No, I like the stars. This is different. What's your astrological? Because it's the same. No, it's not. You're psychotically protective of your private information, but I feel like telling me. Well, you're just gonna lie to me. What is it?
Sure, it's Aries dawning over Gemini.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just wonder why they went with Capricorn.
I think Capricorn has something to do with Mars.
Sure.
Not 100% on that. Well, no, Mars is Aries.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a moon or something. I don't know. It's a good name.
Capricorn, it is.
Okay, so some trivia, Tara.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hyams, our director and writer and cinematographer. He does all three on all his movies.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was a cinematographer on this?
Apparently.
Wow.
I'm not going to bother to verify that. he actually got his start in journalism, working as a producer anchorman for WHDH-TV in... I don't know where that is, but he later moved to a CBS-owned station in New York and served 3 months as a news correspondent in Vietnam.
Wow.
While working on broadcasts of the Apollo mission for CBS, he began thinking of a film about a space hoax, reflecting that was one event of really enormous importance that had almost no witnesses. The only verification we have came from a TV camera. And who knows how false and lying a TV camera is better than a journalist.
Why was this movie not called Space Hoax? It would be like, it would be a cult classic if it was called that.
Space Hoax, yeah. Yeah. He wrote the script in 1972, but no one wanted to make it. He says interest in the screenplay was reactivated after Watergate. So there is, I guess, you know, everyone in this is like, oh, no one believes in America anymore. That's why we have to
right. go through and with And they this shouldn't because here's the government being awful.
And they shouldn't. and I believe the film kind of catapulted or grew a lot of like the moon landing conspiracy theories kind of came after it.
I was thinking about that actually when you were talking about them staging it. It's like this is why that shit digs in, because they go, look how easy it is.
Yeah, even though it's not, but it no, looks easy in all. This bad movie.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, simple. Yeah, to stay within the budget, NASA's cooperation was needed. Luckily, one of the producers had a good relationship with the space agency after making Future World, the Westworld sequel. The original movie, not the...
Not the current
TV show.
Space cowboy show.
The filmmakers were thus able to obtain government equipment as props, despite the negative portrayal of the space agency, including a prototype Apollo lunar module. So it was a real lunar module on that fake soundstage of Mars. There you go.
It did look real. And yeah, it is not a kind portrayal.
No. I mean, I guess like the NASA grunts don't know about this.
No, it's the president.
It's the president, the vice president, and the higher ups.
Mm-hmm.
Candace Bergen, Murphy Brown herself, was originally offered the part of Judy Drinkwater. That's the competing journalist who is played by Karen Black.
She would have been great.
She would have been. But I understand why she turned it down. The snake that, what's his face, James Brolin eats while in the desert. He kills a rattlesnake and cuts it open and eats it and is disgusted by what he's become. He's supposed to be out among the stars, and here he is in the rocks with the snakes. Anyways, it was stuffed with raw fish.
That doesn't sound good.
No, certainly not if they're in the desert. It's not where you want to be eating raw fish. What else? Originally scheduled to debut in February in the United States, but good preview screenings and delays in another movie, Superman, caused it to move to June. And it would become the year's most successful independent film.
Wow. That's, you know, 78, that's when blockbusters were invented. So,
Is that Jaws? That
so that independent thing is a notable
suddenly mattered
line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what, Jaws Star 70, Wars was 77?
Seven, yeah. And then Jaws is literally on TV as I sit here. I could look up the year. But yeah, like this was the dawning of the blockbuster.
Appreciate your undivided attention.
Can you see? Jaws, baby. It's summertime.
This one did throw me when I was watching. Jackson Army Base is located near Jackson, Mississippi, which is 350 miles northeast of Houston and 630 miles from Cape Canaveral, and also not in a desert. Because at one point they say, Karen Black says, the only military base that's abandoned is this Jackson one, and it's 300 miles west of Houston. And there is desert, I believe, 300 miles west of Houston, but it's a long way away. I don't know. They kept, because they go in three different directions, much like the end of Tenet, when the three dudes go in different directions in the desert. Because they were flying west, I guess, to reach the California and the coast. And James Brolin says, I'll keep going west. Somebody go south. Somebody go north. We can't go east. That's where we came from. Even though they'd only been flying a little bit, and that seems like maybe the safest. Again, you just need to run into anyone. So if you go back east, you're probably not going to be, as long as you avoid major roads, you can probably avoid any government people.
Going deep into the desert was certainly not the answer.
Yeah, they had like a little flask of water each and a couple matches. And it didn't seem like a great plan.
No. I mean, listen, the next time the government's after you, you tell me how well planned your escape was.
Hey, fair enough.
We'll compare notes. As you know, I would run straight into the government assassin's gun. So,
just to get it over with, or because
bad
luck?
I'm not being chased around. Just do it.
Especially the desert. You don't like heat.
Ugh, no, too hot.
Hyams later joked, O.J. Simpson was in it, and Robert Blake was in my first feature, Busting.
Great.
I've said many times, some people have AFI Lifetime Achievement Awards, some people have multiple Oscars. My bit of trivia is that I've made films with two leading men who were subsequently tried for the first-degree murder of their wives.
That's a weird way to not just call them murderers.
Yeah. Or even alleged murder would be more concise.
Yeah.
Two men who were subsequently tried for the first-degree murder of their wives. Two different novelizations of the film were written and published by separate authors. One in the United Kingdom, one in the United States. I guess that's rare. One of the novels is notable for giving Robert Caulfield more development than the movie does. That's Elliot Gould's character. Mm-hmm. Including giving him something of a relationship with Judy Drinkwater. That is a good name.
It's shocking to me this movie did not have time to cram in any sex.
Yeah.
For how, like, horny Elliot Gould is the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd think they would have just figured it out.
Well, this book ends with him and Judy together, and the story saves his career. And that slow motion run, to the funeral felt like, okay, we're just done. We ran out of money ending.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like we're missing the reunited scene of Brolin and his wife.
Yes.
And then also Gould in bed with Karen Black.
Yeah, and being vindicated with his front page story. And the president's arrested. All that stuff.
Yeah, all that good stuff.
Where's all that?
Clips from the faked Mars landing scene have been used for illustrative purposes in various moon landing hoax conspiracy documentaries. Notably, the Fox TV show Conspiracy Theory, Did We Land on the Moon? And others.
I like that there's a siren right now. It sounds like the conspiracy police are coming for you.
I have my window open. It's a little warm. Hyams has three sons. I enjoyed reading about this on his Wikipedia. His first son, Chris Hyams, is the CEO of the job search website Indeed.
Good for Chris.
His second son, John Hyams, is also a film director and also directed a Universal Soldier movie.
Hmm.
Father and son, both directing Van Damme Universal Soldier films. And his third son, Nick Hyams, works as a battle rap promoter under the name Lush One.
Well, that's embarrassing. Sorry,
but kind of like Capricorn One. I wonder if he got inspired by his dad's
name. A battle rap producer.
You mentioned Elliot Gould playing Jack Geller, but Brenda Vaccaro who plays James Brolin's wife, was also cast on Friends as Gloria Tribbiani, Joey's mom.
Mm-hmm. She was very funny.
During the episode, The One Where Ross Can't Flirt, Joey Tribbiani's grandmother mentions the film by name when Joey claims to be Sam Waterston in an episode of Law & Order. Maybe she plays his grandma?
No, his grandmother couldn't speak English.
Ah.
That was the whole plot. Like, they had to trick her into believing that he was on Law & Order because his scene got cut.
Furthermore, more Friends connections. Did you know this? Because I didn't. Telly Savalas is the godfather of Jennifer Aniston.
I did not know, but that doesn't surprise me because she comes from a Hollywood family.
I didn't know that.
Her dad, John, is Victor Kuryakis from Days of Our Lives.
Doesn't. Okay.
Trust me, that's big.
Speaking of Telly, Capricorn One is often cited as Paul Rudd's favorite Telly Savalas performance.
It is very good. Telly's very good.
I don't know where that bit of trivia comes from.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, Capricorn One, not
great.
One of the
but you can
great
stream
standards.
It for free on YouTube. Very
you can stream it for free on YouTube, and also all the Elliot Gould scenes are available independently of the movie on YouTube.
Oh,
so
we
you
should
can
have
just
watched
watch
that.
Those.
Yeah, we should have watched that.
Yeah, we'll link to a few.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Anything you want to plug, Tara?
No, I'm good. It's the dead of summer ish. Mm-hmm. I would like to plug Labor Day as usual.
It's coming up.
Coming around the bend. How about you?
No, I'm good.
You can follow you at RWJ Boone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can follow the show at Box Bylines. And you're finding a lot of very good, largely anti-Rory Gilmore tweets these days.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah.
And, of course, people can find you at ThornyHFX on Twitter.
If you wanna.
And, yeah, until next week, Tara, why don't you sign us off? Because I always forget what I say.
I don't know what it is.
All right.
I only know may your jewels always be Richard.
Good enough.
Bye, Jacob.
Bye, Jacob.